But first up today, the American judicial system is abusing potential jurors. That's what our guest says about the invasive, privacy-invading process of jury selection. It's so invasive that many jurors are tempted to lie. Joining me now is Melanie Wilson. She's a professor and associate dean for academic affairs at the KU School of Law, and she's written about all of this. Melanie, good morning. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Well, you use the term juror abuse, Melanie. Is it really that bad?
It certainly can be from the perspective of the juror. Oftentimes they're asked whether, for example, they've ever been accused of sexual assault, if they've ever contacted a rape crisis center, if they've ever been convicted of a crime. So at least if you're not participating in the process, you might not think so. If you're asked those questions and you have some secret in your past that you don't want to reveal, it certainly feels that way to the juror.
You know, what do jurors say to you about questions like that? Because now that you mention it, this is one of those things where you sit back and sort of think to yourself, yeah, you're making a pretty good point here. Why would that happen in open court, and what do jurors say to you about it?
Well, actually, Steve, I was a federal prosecutor before I became a law professor, and I think I was as guilty as anybody else. My training was that you ask these questions not to invade somebody's privacy, and you tell that to the jury as a trial lawyer, but the idea is to get a fair and impartial jury. It's particularly important, of course, to the defense, who has a constitutional right to that fair and impartial jury. So the idea is not to probe them, that is, the jurors, too deeply, but it's a consequence of trying to protect the fair and impartial constitutional right for the defense.
So you would ask that those kinds of questions. Could you see the reticence in the faces of some female jurors particularly?
Really, in all jurors. So once they reveal that they had some uncomfortable topic, oftentimes the judge might invite them up to the bench, and that is have just the litigants, the lawyers, the defense, the accused, and the juror. But the juror usually continued to be concerned about revealing the secret, not wanting it, obviously, on the public record, which is part of the trial.
And when they would have those discussions at the bench, would those conversations become part of a public record?
They would, and that's precisely what I'm concerned about in terms of putting pressure on folks that are trying, of course, just to fulfill their civic duty. They want to take part, of course, in the criminal process and be fair and participate. But we put them in an awkward position where they're basically asked to give up this very private information or withhold information that they know they should reveal because it's responsive to a question, or outright lie.
And so the consequence might be what? Just what you mentioned, an outright lie, Melanie? Is that where we're headed here?
It does seem to be. It's difficult, of course, to judge how many lies anyone tells. But the anecdotal evidence is growing, both in the appellate court reversals of trials where ultimately the information comes out long after the conviction is recorded. We learn that a juror either withheld information or, as I say, just falsely reported some information. And also, of course, newspaper and media reports. It does seem that the anecdotal evidence is growing, that this does happen with some frequency, even though we can't exactly count it up.
Well, I can't believe you're the first person to raise a red flag here over this whole idea of juror abuse. Are you the first person?
No, not at all. I think courts and scholars have been concerned about abuse of jurors, and certainly there's been discussion about why do we allow these probing questions. The problem has been that courts and scholars, in my view, have undervalued the risk that pressuring jurors with these questions without giving them some sort of avenue to extract themselves from the process. I think what's been overlooked is this pressure on them to lie. So historically, courts and scholars have said, well, yes, we do impose these duties on jurors to reveal this sensitive information, but it's imperative that we do that because their rights have to be balanced against the accused's constitutional rights, and therefore their rights, that is the jurors' rights, are always subordinate. My position is that's just short-sighted because we're not factoring in the fact that once they begin to lie or withhold information, we're actually undermining the accused's rights. That's the part that's new.
We're visiting with the KU School of Law's Melanie Wilson. You know, Melanie, even the description you just gave a few minutes ago about a juror who might have something very sensitive to say, and he or she sort of lets that be known, and they end up walking up to the bench and having a private conversation with the judge, even that strikes me as potentially extremely embarrassing.
Absolutely, especially since the Supreme Court has made very clear that even if the judge, the trial judge, suggests that those conversations are in fact quote-unquote private, they're really not. The court reporter records everything that's said. There is a paper record made of it. It stays in the public record, and really the media or a member of the public could obtain that transcript and match up all those sensitive topics with the juror themselves.
You know, when you mentioned you were a federal prosecutor yourself, Melanie, can you recall a time when you walked up to the bench with a potential juror and you could feel the level of discomfort, you know, very clearly as you stood up there?
Yes, usually it happened when you asked about someone's criminal history or victimization history. And so, for example, if someone has been the victim of rape, it's very painful for him or her to relive that in front of strangers, even if you're saying you're having a private conversation. It's very difficult. And so it can be traumatic for the juror. What's interesting to me is almost always after that juror has to share that traumatic event, then that juror is struck. So it's not as though they go through this painful process and then they are selected and serve on the jury. Usually that's the information that serves as the basis of the strike that removes them from their service.
You know, I almost can't believe there hasn't been more done about this prior to the conversation that you and I are having right now.
Well, I guess, you know, each of us can be called for jury duty, and certainly about 8 million people report every year, but not that many people serve. And oftentimes, if they have a bad experience, they try to avoid service the next time. So I think there is growing concern. I'm not sure the public really knows their exposure until they get there, and there's not much they can do about it once they're in court.
Because clearly they're in a position where they know they have to speak the truth at the risk of perjury, right?
Correct.
Man, and that's a pretty heavy potential penalty they're looking at staring down the barrel of a gun at here.
Well, it certainly, I'm sure, feels quite daunting, especially if you're new to the system, so you don't necessarily know what your rights are, or that you could assert your rights, or you could make an objection. And even if you were to make an objection, I think the judge typically would look at you and say, you know, ma'am, we're not trying to impose on you, but this is part of your responsibility. You do have to answer this difficult question.
Do you have any statistics, Melanie, that begin to look at this idea of how often jurors are misrepresenting themselves in the courtroom and that's being found out later and entire cases are being tossed out as a result?
As far as I know, there's no empirical study that counts dishonesty. I've looked at dishonesty in the context of police dishonesty in the past, and it's obviously very difficult to know how much of the time it happens because we can't always account for the lie. So, in other words, jurors may get away with it numerous times that aren't counted. My focus has really been on looking at appellate court cases where there has been found to be dishonesty, the case is reversed. And I would say that there's a growing number, but at least as far as I know, there's no empirical study of that yet.
Well, so what's your potential solution for this, Melanie Wilson? What are you proposing be done here to deal with the issue of juror abuse?
I would just like to shift some of the power back to the individual juror. And right now, the system allows the litigants a number of peremptory strikes and for-cause strikes. That is, if a juror clearly is predisposed against or for guilt, you can strike them. Mm-hmm. And also, you have some freebies is what I would call them, where you can strike someone for any idiosyncratic reason as long as it's not race or gender or something of that type. And so what I would propose is to allow a juror the same opportunity to remove herself from a given case, go back up to the jury pool, and basically start over, still performing her civic duty, but not at the expense of being essentially abused by a particular case in an effort to pick a fair jury. So just shift a little bit of the power back to the juror. Don't excuse them from their duty, but allow them to remove themselves, exercise their own strike, if you will, in a given case.
And how would that work, mechanically speaking? What would happen if a juror recognized that a certain case might be uncomfortable for them? What would you have them do?
I would have the judge, first off, explain that they have this right so that they don't feel as though they are forced to answer these tough questions, and the judge would explain to them a couple times as he or she would talk about the other peremptory strikes. Then the juror would know that when we get to a topic that's really uncomfortable, I at least can say to the judge, this is one of those areas that's really difficult for me, and in a general way explain the problem, ask if she can or he can go back up to the jury pool. And, you know, judges already have great leeway to preside over the peremptory challenges that the litigants use. So this wouldn't be very different. It would just allow a little bit of power to the individual juror.
Well, Melanie, interesting conversation, interesting thoughts. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You bet. That's Melanie Wilson. She's a professor and associate dean for academic affairs at the KU School of Law.